Welcome to episode 452 of the Permaculture Pimpcast, where PIMP stands for Permaculture is My Passion. The only pimp cats on this earth that discusses permaculture, preparedness, practical living, and sometimes prostitutes.
Permaculture PIMP with Soulful Grace in a PIMP cast where we find.
Well, it seems like forever and a day that William and I did a podcast together. We've been doing a whole lot of interviews as of late. Well, anyway, this episode, as always, brought to you by the Sovereign Health Summit. Folks, you want to definitely check this out. That's going to be October 27th through the 31st. That's going to be in Harmony, North Carolina. And if you want to be there virtually, you can do that too. We got that option at the website. So go check it out. TPC, Tango, Papa, Charlie will get you 5% off. Also, Wellness Blanket, 10% off with promo code PERMA. Michelle is wrapped up in that whoopee every night. She hogs it so much that we had to buy another one just to put on our bed. So that's how well these things work, y'all. We don't sell junk. How you doing, son?
Pretty good. Mom's hogging all the covers again.
Yeah, man. It's well, she takes this blanket. Okay. The one we got the first time was it's meant for not a twin, but what's the size right above that?
A full.
Yeah, full size. So it's not gonna fit on our queen bed. So anyway, she just uses it whenever she's sitting on the couch every night, and she'll wrap up in this thing. And I'm like, man, it's hot up, because we don't use the air conditioner unless somebody's here. So, you know, here she is wrapped up, all hugged up in this blanket, and ain't even trying to share it. So anyway, yeah, we had to wind up getting another one. So how's everything on your end?
Everything's pretty good here. Yesterday, we started a flea bomb in the house. Now, we use a product which everybody's going to cringe when I say it out loud, because it's stuff that, depending on how you discuss this topic or product, will get you banned on YouTube. But I use chlorine dioxide, the pool cleaner, to do it's okay to say it in this category, Dad, as long as I don't say it cures anything, which it, you know, it doesn't. We use it for fleas in the house. And so you set up like a bucket, you put and we reached out to them, find out exactly how much we needed to use for the size house and what the problem we had and stuff like that. So we're following their instructions. We put the water in the buckets, and we had a bucket per room. And then we evacuated everybody out of the house. I put Emily and the baby at a hotel, and then went back and then was going to pick up the dog. And after I started the gassing process and all that. But as I'm dumping the chlorine dioxide in the buckets, I leave the room and then seal the room. I have a fan going in there for circulation. And then I seal the room on the outside, so that way this concentration is staying in this room and it's, you know, just trying to be as effective as possible. And I do that for each room. And then I get to the master bedroom, which is the largest, amount of the stuff that I've used so far was in the main bedroom. And as I'm sealing up the door, a loud boom goes off. It was so loud. I thought it came from like outside and like something else happened. It didn't even register for a second that it was the bucket inside the room. And then I like opened the door real quick just to quickly see. And there's just this yellow fog in the room. So then I'm like, oh, crap. Then I just quickly shut the door again. I forget taping the rest of the house. I quickly dose the other buckets in the house. And then I grab Chloe, lock the back door, and then we head on out of there. And I call up Emily. I was like, hey, is this thing supposed to like blow up? Is this, because I think it just bleached. My perspective at that moment, it just bleached the entire bedroom. So, and you're supposed to keep your drawers open, all that type of stuff. And I call her up and say, hey, is this supposed to blow up? And she's like, no, it's supposed to pop a little bit. And I was like, that was not a little bit. So we wait 24 hours back to today, and I'm kind of eager to open up the house and get it ventilating and then also check out the master bedroom to see how much damage was done. I go in there, and it was barely anything happened. Like the fleas, I think, are gone. They recommended multiple applications, so we'll see how well it did. But what I thought was just massive explosion. I'm thinking we're going to have to do like an insurance claim. Like this house is kind of ruined. We're going to have to fix stuff up. And I go back in there and there's just a couple of spots of like dry bleach powder is what it looks like on some of the like the comforter. And then Chloe's blanket, our dog, her blanket was right next to the bucket, or her pillow was right next to the bucket, and just had some dry bleach powder there. But yeah, thought I was for sure dying for at least half a second after that boom went off. So if anybody's going to, you know, gas bomb their house to get rid of odor or fleas or whatever it may be in their house with a chlorine dioxide, just know that it will pop and is going to be even louder if it's in a 5-gallon bucket. So there's your little PSA, and it's going to foam like crazy. So just keep all that in mind. I think it worked pretty well other than that though.
Well, it works also in vehicles. If you have a vehicle that, let's say you were going to buy it and you didn't because the person that bought it smoked, you know, like crazy, it will remove all those old odors from a vehicle. In fact, if I were to get a new vehicle or something like that, that new car smell is not wonderful for you. So that's another way to get rid of that as well. So, yeah, that's a really good trick there. So I'm glad you used it for that application. Although there might be other ways in which you could use it, folks. You're going to have to look that up. All right. So I'll kick this one off on my end. All right. So anybody that's listened to the last couple of podcasts, you'll realize the one on Monday and the one I did yesterday, we had a lot of weird, crazy technical issues, things that just didn't seem to work out, things that were falling by the wayside. I'd never experienced anything like that before. I got a theory as to why that happened. And I think it's the nature. I think the powers that should not be, and maybe the spiritual realm, might have had a hand in some of that. Because think about what we talked about on Monday. If you haven't listened to that, go back and check it out. Had Ryan Matta in here, and we talked about a lot of the seedy things that are going on with kids. And he dropped some incredible stats, and you can verify every single bit of it. In fact, folks, he held back quite a bit. It's much worse than he talked about. But anyway, had issues with him getting on. And then yesterday had Flat Earth Dave on here. And if anybody's listened to an interview with Flat Earth Dave, I mean, man, he is Johnny on the spot. But he and I, for some reason, could not. I was having problems on my end. He was having problems on his end. In fact, Ryan had to go to 3 different browsers before he could even access the program. That's how crazy it was. But also, there were people in the chat, and folks, I'm telling this as a cautionary tale. Look, when you do this kind of work, when you bring truth to power, when you're talking about things that the powers that shouldn't be don't want you to talk about, you better be prayed up from the feet up, and that's what I didn't do. Folks, I didn't do. I didn't put on that full armor. And I think we suffered the consequence because of it, because there were some other weird things that happened, like last night in particular, where as I'm going through there, my brain, for some reason, I know there was a lot of weirdos in the chat, people we've never seen before, and they came out of nowhere. Well, it wouldn't shock me if there was a whole cadre of people out there doing things that were, you know, that maybe they were putting hexes on a brother. I don't 100% sure, no. But then this morning, it seemed to follow me. Michelle and I prayed about it, and then all of a sudden, just like that, on the spot, it went away. So I'm convinced, at least on my end, that it had to be something spiritual. So folks, what I'm trying to tell you here is, when, no matter where you find yourself, no matter any position, you better be prayed up from the feet up, especially these days, especially when you're talking about things or you're discussing things. Because if Dave is so far off the mark, I mean, maybe I don't agree with him on everything, but if he's so far off the mark, then why not just let him talk? If Ryan's so far off the mark, then why not just let him talk? Why are you dropping these guys' YouTube channels and doing all the other CD stuff they do? If they're so far off the mark, then you would let them speak and let them show their butts, so to speak. So anyway, that won't happen again, folks. You know, at least on my end, I will be prayed up from the feet up, especially when we know that we're going to be talking about topics. Because, son, even your mom was saying, she was like, man, it was like you guys were a little bit disjointed. And we were. He was having problems, and me mentally, Man, I never have a problem with in the middle of a conversation, especially on a topic that I know a lot about. And I'm sitting here as I'm doing the interview, my brain just couldn't function. And I'm stepping all over my words. I can't pronounce things. And then, like I said, this morning we pray. I should have caught it then, but I was reaching over to grab a machete out of the garage. And
you might want to explain that.
Hey, man, you deal with the spiritual realm any way you got to. But no, I was grabbing a machete out of the garage. There was a couple of, if you have a couple of certain things that are growing out there, a machete is your best tool, not a weed eater necessarily, or even a chainsaw. So I was grabbing it before we were going out to get chores. And all of a sudden, this wave of, how do you describe it, man? I can only describe it as dread, terror. And remember, the Lord has not given us a spirit of fear, but of peace. And when that happened, it was right then and there. It all came together. I grabbed your mom. I said, look, stop everything. We need to pray right now. And it, up until that time, I was filled with this anxiety that I couldn't explain. It's happened before, and before we knew precisely how to deal with it, then all of a sudden, she and I prayed, and bam, it went away instantly. So thank you, Lord. So, folks, that's what I wanted to talk about there. I didn't mean to spend so much time on it, so I'll get into other things. Yeah, well, I guess on the heels of something like that, everybody, son, have you noticed everybody's going nuts over this film that's about to come out called Disclosure Day?
Yeah, I just recently heard about it. You're talking about the one with the aliens, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just recently heard about that one. I don't really know what to think of it. I haven't really paid much attention to it at all, just because, I don't know. It's some sort of trap. We know this ain't, everybody here at least knows that something ain't legit about this movie. Just knowing the topic, knowing that it's hitting the movie theaters and that everybody's paying attention to it seems like a trap.
Yeah, that's exactly what Raul, my friend Raul, used to be from the Firmamental podcast. He's doing his own thing these days. He had brought it up today. I'd totally forgotten about it. And I was thinking, okay, man, you know what? You got to be really, really cautious. And there was an interview that I sent you earlier today, son, about an insider from Hollywood and the music industry. And they embed all this kind of stuff into every single movie that comes out right now. May not be the case if it's a Christian-based, you know, movie house or something like that. And he was talking about even your Netflix subscriptions and a number of other things. They embed this stuff in there to get into your psyche. And folks, if you think that doesn't happen, it does. And so when you go to these things, you got to be really cautious. Now, I feel halfway tempted to go there because of the nature of the work we do. So thinking, okay, in order for me to know what the enemy's doing, that's why I listened to half of the podcast I listened to today, so I can kind of get abreast of what's going on there, determine my own evaluation of it, and then maybe report back to you what my breakdown is. So that's why there's a lot of other podcasts I listen to these days that are mostly about health and how to make that better. But I do keep one foot at least in there to find out what's going on. So my point being, I don't think it's a coincidence, and I'm sure you don't and the other people in this audience don't, is it seemed like a coincidence that all of a sudden the Trump administration says, yeah, we're going to release all these this alien stuff. Now you have Disclosure Day coming out. Folks, let me remind you that Dr. Carol Rosen, she was the sidekick or the assistant to Wernher von Braun. Yeah. So right, she reports that right before he died, he told her, and I guess she was at his deathbed for the most part, first thing they're going to do is it's going to be rogue nations. Then it's going to be rogue terrorists. Then it's going to be something else. And then the final card that they intend to play. And Dr. Rosen came out with this years and years ago, by the way, folks, if you think this just came out yesterday, she said this years ago that the last card they play, son, what's it going to be?
The aliens.
The aliens. And right before that, it's going to be the celestial threat, which they've already kind of brought that one out. So when they feel like they've taken this thing as far as they can go, that's exactly the last thing they're going to pull. And I find it no coincidence that Steven Spielberg, likely one of these sleazy creatures, probably on Epstein's list. I mean, the guy, he definitely has some weird stuff going on in his background and a lot of reports about things that he's allegedly done. Anyway, here he is making this movie. no doubt very captivating. But folks, if you go there, like I said, like I began the beginning of this program, if you're going in there, make sure your intentions are right, make sure you're prayed up, and make sure you're going in. I'm not watching it as entertainment. I watch most things these days, if I watch anything at all, to find out exactly how, what is the play they are using. Because I know that everything they do is a manufactured lie. And I mean in government, I don't care, Democrat, Republicans, they're all in it together. Read the work of Carol Quigley. You'll know what I'm talking about. All of these people work together. So, son, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, and keep in mind with Spielberg, his method for coming up with stories or writing or anything like that, it's the same exact process as like the Vril Maidens that Hitler used, where he gets heavily intoxicated. He's talked about this in interviews. He gets very, very intoxicated, and then he does almost this autonomic writing where he's not even like he isn't consciously coming up with these stories. He just gets messed up and then starts writing. And same thing that Hitler used for the Vril Maidens to get all that technology.
It's funny because a whole lot of people that are working in all kinds of parts of the entertainment industry, whether it be through music, you name it, every single bit of them go into, let's call it, altered states of consciousness to get some of these ideas. In fact, some of the, like, you know, Eddie Van Halen, you ask him, hey, he's asked a number of times in interviews before he died, how did you ever come up with that? And he says, it wasn't through me. Well, one thing you know about Eddie is that my man was messed up from the feet up all the way around. And that's where he came up with a lot of this stuff. So like William said, in his case, maybe it's automatic writing. For a lot of these other people, they go into these other realms. When you change your state of consciousness, you're opening yourself up to all kinds of stuff. Now, I'm not saying you can't have a beer or a couple of beers or whatever the case being, but when you get to the point where you're not in the driver's seat anymore, that's where a whole lot of things. Why do you think they call alcohol spirits, y'all? Yeah, so that's how that stuff happens. All right, so I'm going to leave all that behind to talk about some of this other farm news. I wanted to cover that because it's important. And this is the last time you're going to hear me talk before that that movie. Other things we're doing around here, we got tons of comfrey out there, and we've been planting the daylights out of the crowns over here. So, folks, if you take the comfrey that we bought and you dig it up, you harvest it, put a crown back, cut up the other crowns, sell them, plant them elsewhere. I mean, there is a reason why that is our most valuable player here on this farm. Other things, I didn't really get to talk about it in the depth I'd like to, but I want to give a hat tip to the folks over at Wise Traditions, man. Alberto and his wife, Annette, they came by for a brief visit. They came by on Sunday, and it was such a joy to be around some incredible people. And you talk about how the Lord puts certain people in your place. I mean, I talked about it briefly in the last time, but we ran into them at an ice cream shop about a year ago. Next thing you know, they're stopping by for a visit. And it was a real, real joy. I mean, absolutely people that practice what they preach. And it is always a joy to be in the company of those kinds of people. So that was a real joy. Other things going on around here. Yeah, we got apples coming up in a big, big way around here. Got some peaches. Remember, folks, this is why you want early, mid, and late of every single thing you grow, especially when it comes to your perennials. So we got early, mid, and late apples. So if you get a late or early frost like we just have, that peach tree that's outside this window, I'm looking at it right now, that peach tree that gave us 400 pounds of peaches last year has two of them on there this year. Why? Because of a late frost. Well, two buds happen to make it, so that's all I'm getting off that tree. But because it got mid and late, those guys are doing just fine. So think about that when you design your orchards, your food forest, all those things. And then, other things, you know, going every time we go to town, man, we stack functions. Folks, you don't just do it in your farm. You do it with every trip. What am I talking about? Every time we drop off packages, I go to the local college and I pick up wood chips. And I'm putting them, just redoing everything that we have out here. Those aged wood chips, y'all, they are going to pay dividends in massive ways. So think about those other things where you can stack functions like, okay, I got to go to town. What other things can I do at the same time that are going to benefit me? So it's also zoning, if you stop to think about it, on a macro level. On a macro level. So if I'm going to the grocery store, okay, down the street from there is a post office, got to hit them both. And then just a little further down the street are those wood chips. So why come back empty handed? So every single time I go to town, y'all, I'm picking up an entire load of wood chips at the same time, putting it in my food forest, putting it around the country we grow. We're putting it in so many different places. And if you really want to kick it up, put down some cardboard first. And then finally, want to tell everybody I started a, I was telling William before we went live here, Michelle and I just started the latest program, a physical program. And folks, I think you might be blown away by it. It's with fascia. And I talked briefly about it earlier in the week. And Michelle and I are about 8 days into it. So there's a 7-day program and it's called the Human Garage. And then there's also a 28-day program. We start on 28-day program tomorrow. Folks, you're gonna look at this and think, okay, man, this is just a bunch of stretching. It's really a lot more than that. I'm talking, it is a reset in so many different ways, folks. We have got to find every healing modality we can, everything we can to, you know, center ourselves, be in the moment, not be freaking out. If you're stressed out, you might want to look at some of this stuff. So, son, did you have anything more to add? I know we were talking a moment ago about your bug bomb, but anything else going on around there?
Yeah, real quick, talking about the fascia, I remember there was a podcast that Mom and I were listening to on the way back from, I think it was New York when we were all living in Texas at the time. And we were in Tennessee when she played this podcast. It was the Art of Manliness podcast. I don't know if they're still around. I don't know. I haven't kept up with that particular podcast. But he had a guest on talking about the Greeks doing that. They called it fascia running. And how they were like the first marathon, like the reason the guy was able to run that far that quickly just on a drop of a dime is because they were doing a lot of fascia running and running through the Greek, I don't know if you'd call them mountains or not, but like it's steep over there in certain spots. And they're able to run through there with their goats using their fascia without ever really getting tired. And also whenever you're doing like either wrestling or jiu-jitsu or anything like that, there's what's called like weight strength and then like grappling strength. And you'll get some people in there that can't bench 135 for one rep, but then they're stronger than everybody else in the gym whenever it comes to like jiu-jitsu and wrestling. And I wonder if they're tapping into potentially that fascia strength.
I think that's exactly what they're doing. And they could even tap into it even a little bit more where it intersects everything in your body. And so your mom and I have been doing these stretches, me a little bit more, and man, I'm feeling a big, big difference, I think, so far, and she as well, where she gets a little bit stressed out about all the things that we have going on around here. I'll stop her. Okay, we're going to go out here and do this. How do you feel? She's like, yeah, I feel centered again. So it's not just for that. If you're dealing with a health ailment and stuff like that, go check them out, the Human Garage. I'm going to reach out to them and see if I can't get them on the program. But yeah, no, folks, we juggle a lot of things, but if I physically can't do the work, you know, what good is any of it? So it was kind of cool to go into my chiropractor. I went there on Monday, and he was doing an update on me, you know, just kind of checking things out. My Atlas bone had been out, and he worked on me. I told him about doing this program, and man, he was just all giddy. He's like, dude, we know absolutely nothing about the fascia. So it's so awesome that there's people out there actually talking about it. So he wanted the link so he could check it out himself. So anyway, that'll cover the farm news. Real quick, let me cover this question. What kind of meds are bad in urine to use in compost? Kyle asked that question. And by the way, folks, if you have questions, please put them in capital letters so I can actually see them through these birth control glasses. So anyway, if it comes through your urine, you can always assume that it is an improved state. So even if you're taking meds, and by the way, if you are, perhaps it might be in your best interest to figure out how to not take them. If you are taking those meds, by the time your body's done with them and it's going out through your urine, in fact, Dr. Group covers this in detail, that it's in a much better form. So don't let that, you know, give you any sense of fear of putting it into your compost. And the best is going to be, you know, you and everybody else in your family. If you can put that in your compost, you know, you don't want to be getting 5-gallon buckets of it, but you know, periodically, you know, as you collect it, maybe a gallon at a time or less, depending on the pile, every time you put that in there, folks, it's only going to compost. It's only going to make compost that's more designed for you. Yep, sounds a little bit fruity, but hey, that's what we do. Anyway, Stefan Subkowiak seemed a little bit blown away by that son when I told him on his program.
Yeah, he did, which that comes out Father's Day, by the way. If anybody's interested, the interview that me and Dad did with Stefan and his son is going to come out. Is it exactly on Father's Day that it's coming out or after?
I don't know.
I think it's going to come out on Father's Day. That's not their normal upload day, but I think they're making it come out on Father's Day. So that'll be fun if anybody's interested in that. Go check out Permaculture Orchard Podcast if you want to hear that interview come out.
Definitely go check them out. All right, y'all, Wave Watch, Billy 100. We'll get you $100 off that watch. If you see any video, William's holding his up right now. I got the older version, which I like. Everybody freaks out when they see that thing, and they're thinking it's some kind of, you know, some kind of smart watch or some, like I'm calling in artillery. They don't know what it is. But, folks, I wear that thing every single time I go to town and, you know, occasionally right here in the studio. Depends on what I might be dealing with. Billy 100 will get you $100 off of that. All right, Bond Charge. If you're wanting some of these balling glasses that William and I have on, go to Bond Charge. We've got a link for it down below. B-O-N Charge. Perma will get you, I think, 15% off at that one. So anyway, go check them out if you're wanting some really, really balling blue blockers. Yeah, say that 10 times. And then finally, Soil Saviors. We've got a link for that down below for everybody. You don't have time to make compost. You can't get around to it. Well, that's your next best things. Link below. All right. So, son, we'll kick off some of the good news here. Beyond the cup of coffee. So, in this article, they're talking about the science of morning beverages and brain function. So, instead of doing coffee, if you're like me, you have a nasty reaction to coffee if you're not drinking it where it's grown. And I can't even tell you what all that entails. I just know with me, if I drink coffee and I'm not in that environment, I have reactions. I have things that aren't pleasant, believe me. So they offer some alternatives for all those out there, obviously water being one of them. And every single morning I get up, I drink I'd say 16 ounces of water with a half a teaspoon of Dr. Will's salt in there. And see what else I put in there. A little bit of lemon juice that'll help you get a little bit more hydrated. Guarantee if you woke up, you are already dehydrated. You lost a lot of water through the night. So that's one I definitely do. Here's another one is green tea and matcha combines the effect of L-theanine. And you can get a sustained focus without the jitters. Okay, that might be something. But I have the MFTR gene problem, which means I probably shouldn't be fooling around with green tea if I remember that correctly. Here's another one that never has bothered me, and that's yerba mate. You get the caffeine and the theobromine for, you know, a smooth energy curve without the crash. I've always done good with yerba mate. I might want to think about that. And then hot cocoa, folks, not the American way. The hot cocoa like they do it in El Salvador, where it's just the cocoa and water, and they steeped it. You know, that's about it. So you get all the benefits of a small amount of caffeine, but you're also getting a whole lot of really wonderful things that's in that cocoa. So, and you want to make sure you source that stuff. I mean, I hear there's a lot of nasty things in a lot of cocoa out there. So you want to make sure you got a good source. And then of course you can do the high protein smoothies and stuff like that. So in fact, you can even add some of that stuff to your smoothie if that's the way you choose to roll. All right. Next one here is 7 herbal sleep remedies that deepen restful sleep, restore nervous system function. And by the way, y'all, I was talking about that Human Garage. They even have a routine for you to sleep even better. And most of their stuff is free. You can find it. I mean, you can go to their YouTube channel and you're going to find a lot of this stuff that's free. I would do that 15-minute reset and you know, do that every single day and see how you feel. See if it moves the needle a little bit on you. So yeah, 7 herbal sleep remedies. Here's another one because, you know, so many people are using melatonin, which you should not be doing. You should not be messing with that stuff, folks. It's definitely not long-term. I knew people that use that stuff every single night. So here's some things that you can do. I mean, valerian, chamomile, and passion flower increase GABA, which is going to help you chill. It has like a sedation effect. Lavender. Yeah, lavender. Aromatherapy increases slow sleep wave, slow wave sleep, whatever that means. William, you're the sleep guy, whatever that means.
Lavender sounds like that, like your substitute teacher in the hood.
yeah, lavender. Yeah, so here's another one. Ashwagandha lowers cortisol levels to address stress-related insomnia. Lemon balm, that's really good. There's a whole lot of other things these herbs work for, folks. You don't need to go to the pharmacist to get a lot of relief out of this stuff, folks. And then honestly, with the way the world's getting right now, I know it hasn't really hit the U.S. yet, but I'm telling you what, the Strait of Hormuz is down, and they're talking about dropping some of the other ones. So you better be holding on to your hat. You might want to think about growing some of this stuff. So here's another one. Honey consumption rises as research suggests the health benefits. I guess people are just now figuring that out. Okay. So, yeah. Here's what you want to do. Look, I could sit here and tell you this study. Here's the bottom line. Get your honey as local as can be. Don't, if it's pasteurized, you need to take a tack hammer, wrap them in the head a couple of times and ask them, why are you pasteurizing honey? I mean, that is the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life. People bragging about it. Oh, we pasteurize our honey. It was already perfect to begin with. Here's how we do it right here at Perma Pastor's Farm. It comes out of the frame. Well, it comes out of the hive, comes out of the frame. I spin the frame in a little hand crank that I do to this day by hand. I got an electric one, but it doesn't make sense. Spin it by hand, collect it at the bottom of the collector. Only processing we do is that all I do is strain out the wax and bee parts that might have gotten in the honey, and then it comes out the bottom, and then it's ready for consumption. And, of course, our bees out here, unlike everybody else around us, they get absolutely no help. They don't get any sugar water. They don't get anything else. In fact, it's starting to be that time here before too long where I'll put the pollen traps on there, and I'll collect all that pollen out of there. Something William and I learned from Dr. Schmidt, in that is your multivitamin every single day. At least for me, it is. I put it on my salad every single day. So I'll put that on the bees. You know, right now they're doing their own thing, but there will come a time later in the season while I'll put those pollen traps on there. When the bees go through, the pollen falls off and lands in the trap. You leave it on for about a week at a time so it doesn't really weaken your hives at all. And then you take it off and then you collect it. I freeze dry it, and then I use it all year long. That's where I get my multivitamins, folks. That's how it rolls. I mean, they got every single thing in there. Dr. Jana Schmidt has done work after work after work discussing that very thing. So yeah, I'll get mine from nature. But anyway, as far as the honey, that's all. And then from there, it goes in the jar. Steve, the blacksmith, a friend of mine, he and his wife, I just dropped off. Your mom and I dropped off. I think it was on, we went over to visit them on Saturday and dropped off some honey. And then in turn, they got cows and they raise, you know, cows that don't have any drugs in them. And these people are very fastidious about what goes in their bodies. So it's always cool when they hand us back a bunch of cheese and milk. So we're giving them honey with bees that don't get any kind of mite treatment, nothing. Only mite treatment we have is running our chickens through there twice, maybe three times a year. That's how we look after our bees. And if the hives aren't strong enough to ward off any pests, then guess what? Who needs you anyway? So yeah, there's a lot of beekeepers out there. They're calling their honey this and that, that and this, but we don't put anything in it, and we keep only the strong. So that way we are, and plus right now, son, since I put away that weed eater and I use it very, very sparingly, only on silvergrass, I no longer go out there and chop off the seed heads. I don't do any of that stuff. And the number one reason why is because the pollinators. I'm killing their habitat by, you know, but now I'm letting everything go as natural as it can be. And now it's coming back. I mean, we got pollinators that are blowing this place up. There's plenty enough for our bees, and there's plenty enough for all the natural pollinators out there. So, didn't mean to spend so much time on that. I know I say that often, but it's what it is, or is a ghetto philosophy. Yeah.
Real quick, the pasteurization, I wonder if they're, because we are aware of all the frauds and fakes as far as honey goes at the supermarket, and now most of it is completely garbage and not even honey. I wonder if they're doing the pasteurization on some of them because they're harvesting the frames too early before they're capped and they still have that high water content. Wow. So I wonder if they're pasteurizing it because it won't be shelf stable. I wonder if that's part of the reason.
That's a good point there, son. I didn't even think about that. And then, folks, here's another thing to consider. There was even a documentary, and you can probably still find it on Netflix, where they were talking about the bee industry and how, I want to say, maybe 90% of the so-called honey in that store came from a factory in China where they manufacture it. It's as fake as a $3 bill. Okay, it is fake. It ain't even real honey. But they put all these labels on there, and you think, look, unless you know somebody like me or another beekeeper around you and you're aware of their methods, folks, you don't want to get that stuff. I mean, it's, in fact, son, they're so good at faking this so-called wild honey that even the professionals have to put it under a microscope, and you better be a very, very good microscope person to know the difference. Well, your body knows the difference. And so I don't get mixed up in any of that stuff. So, yeah.
Hey, real quick, there's a question from Kai Schlott. Any recommendations as to where we can get bees to start a new hive? I want bees next year for honey. The best place that I've ever noticed to get bee equipment, bee, like anything, colonies, anything like that, is joining your local beekeepers group. There's always going to be two old timers there, two old men that are retired, and they go and they get bees from businesses that don't want bees. So, like, you've seen those bee removal videos. That's exactly what these two old men do. Every beekeeping group has them that I've noticed. And they already have more bees than what their wife wants anyway. So they got to get these bees and then get rid of them or give them away. And they probably have more equipment than they need. So they're, and anybody who's getting in, they get excited about anybody getting into beekeeping.
Yeah.
So that's what I would recommend, is go to a local beekeepers group and you'll probably get everything you need pretty quickly.
Every place has them, y'all. I'm telling you, it's one of those things where when you have, these people are so passionate about their bees that they want, they'd love to see other people get into it. So no matter where you are in that spectrum, I'm telling you what, they will teach you every single thing you need to know. And you're going to see a lot of conflicting information when it comes to bees from so many different people. You know, you're going to have one expert over here telling you to do the very opposite of what this expert, you're just going to have to find out what works for you where you are. So that's what it, you know, when it comes down to brass tacks on these bees, that's really, really what it comes down to, is finding out what works for you. At the end of the day, look, we're not spraying any junk in here. If they get mites, it's because the hive wasn't strong enough to take care of it. So if they get, you know, those moths that get in there, we get that problem from time to time. Okay, I guess you weren't meant to make it. That's how it rolls around here. We're not giving you any drugs, because at the end of the day, really, if we have a robust environment, I think they ought to do well. Now, keep in mind, that's notwithstanding the fact that they're dropping garbage from the sky. So I'm curious to see, now that we have that buster out there that's knocking out, you know, we had Dr. Presser on about a week ago talking about, you know, what this thing does. I can't wait to see what the production on the bees is going to look like. But I will say, folks, I'm seeing production on trees that have never had it before. So I'm waiting with bated breath to see, because last time, man, we give away just about all of the honey. I mean, William, I think we gave you guys one time 5 gallons of it.
Yeah, you give Emily most of the honey, honestly.
Yeah, we give away most of the honey. And, you know, it's a good bartering tool, or it's a good tool, like, you know, I was talking about with Steve the blacksmith. You know, they don't have bees. We do. We don't have cows, or, you know, we don't have milk cows. They do. So it's a perfect symbiotic relationship, and you can find those around you, folks. So keep, you know, keep all that stuff in mind. All right, with that said, we're going to go to my man, Eric Sider.
Hey, Eric Sider here with your PimpCast tip of the day. Today's tip: all roads lead to permaculture. Permaculture is really the only game in town. There are plenty of techniques for growing food and plenty of ways to organize a community, but there is no other system of design that puts it all together in a regenerative way, one that is universally applicable across the globe. None that I know of, anyway. People love to waste time debating techniques as if there is one best way to do anything. As always, it depends. Permaculture is not a technique, despite how often misinformed or ill-intentioned people online try to make it so. It is a strategic system of design based in ethics that dictate our intentions. It is very frustrating how little people value design. Most people are walking around with devices in their pockets that had thousands of hours and millions of dollars of design and research put into it, and it's mostly used to distract ourselves from real life. Then the same people look at you sideways when you try and tell them the importance of designing their property where they spend most of their lives, and where the easiest place to create health and wealth. The biggest issue is the people that see the need or value permaculture tend to not have the money and resources to implement it. And the people with all the money and resources don't value the system. But the worse things get out there, the more people jump on the path to permaculture. You can find me on YouTube and Instagram at Eric Sider. If you're in need of permaculture t-shirts, the official pimp gear of this Pimpcast, or remote permaculture consultation and design, head over to ericsider.com. And for more information on my permaculture community group in the Sacramento area, head over to permaculturefairoak.org.
That's my dog right there. Wow, hits it out of the park once again. And also, it just kind of weaves right into what we just talked about there. I mean, sadly, son, maybe you see it a little bit differently, but sadly, I think before a lot of people start to wake up and smell the corruption, they're going to have to go through the crucible of really, really hard times in this country before they think, oh, shoot, where is my food coming from? Do I have a friend I can go get, you know, honey from? Do I have a friend where I can go get milk from, or whatever those cases may be? I mean, there's always going to be that problem. And sadly, I think a lot of people are not going to wake up until till the bullet hits the bone.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I don't think there's really going to be, if you're not awake by now, I don't think there's going to be another event that wakes anybody up. Having gone through what we just went through, I mean, the lies have never been more obvious than they are right now. If you haven't, I'm not saying like it's impossible for anybody to wake up. I just don't think any one singular event is going to wake up the masses. I think they're in that delusion at this point.
Strong delusion, no doubt about that. Yeah, thanks, Nancy. Everybody hit that like button if you're new coming in here. And no matter what, yeah, hit the like button. It lets everybody know at YouTube that we're live so they can go ahead and start suppressing us. So anyway, it might help a little bit. All right, Nessa's Hemp, 10% off with promo code PERMA. Use that stuff every single day, y'all. That's another little sleep hack I got there is, you know, if you got a little bit of anxiety before you go to bed, take a dropper of that or a half a dropper, whatever you need. And, plus everybody has an endocannabinoid system. That's what we learned the last time she was on the program. Everybody has one of those and it needs to be filled up. And that's one way you can go about it. All right. So let's get into the topic here. And the reason why I really wanted to cover this is one of the big responses I get from so many people is, well, I can't wait to do that when I get land, or I don't have enough land, or I can't do that. I get that so much. In fact, in the last video that I put out talking about how you can, you know, layer your comfrey out there with your nitrogen fixtures to do your mulching and never have to buy mulch ever again. And by the way, the people that were wanting an update on that, don't worry, I'll give it to you when the time's right. And I'll explain exactly, you know, it's a self-licking ice cream cone. You never have to go out and get anything again. Well, there were so many people in there saying, man, I can't wait to get land. In a lot of videos that I do that can't, folks, it doesn't matter where you are. And in fact, that's why I wanted to cover protein in particular. Can you produce all of your protein in 1 acre? Now, keep in mind that unless you live in the tropics, the hardest thing to find in nature is what, son?
It's going to be fat.
That's right. So if you're into preparedness and all that stuff, you know, it's funny how many other people started coming out saying it after I kind of put it in the zeitgeist. And now a lot, I don't need credit for it. I'm just saying, I put that out there. Everybody in the preparedness thing would talk about, you know, protein, carbs, put back your rice and beans and all this kind of stuff. And nobody ever talked about fat. Now, if you live in the tropics, fat comes relatively easy in the form of so many things like coconut and avocado. Easy to come by. I mean, insanely easy to come by. But when you're in more temperate environments, not so much. Or it's a little bit harder to come by, but other things may come a little bit easier. So let's just talk about protein in this part right now. So let's pretend for a moment you're on 1 acre. And William and I had talked about maybe doing something like this in a video, like taking a 1 acre spot and then just let's see how much food we can produce on this 1 acre, maybe put a some sort of domicile out there. And we've talked about it over and over. Maybe in the future we'll have that opportunity. But people think they need less protein than they really do. Typically, you know, depending on whom you ask, anywhere between 50 to 100 grams per day, or maybe not that much, or maybe way more than that, depending on what it is you're trying to do. But right off the bat, I think one of the biggest, I mean, I got so many things I can go here. I don't want to kick it off and wipe out William's list here, but
thank you.
I'm gonna tell you right now, if you don't get the bigger version of the hair sheep, believe it or not, that's one of the most efficient protein sources in the permaculture system that you could do on an acre, because you're converting, at the end of the day, you're converting forage into meat while building soil fertility. If you do what Eric talked about, design, you can do none of what we're talking about. I don't even know what's on William's list, but I'm telling you, folks, you can't do any of this if you have a lousy design. So that's going to be my first one.
I designed my list so where I started off with the smallest possible space and then worked my way out from there. So, like, this is a small property. Start in zone zero. We'll start inside the house, and then we'll build up to bigger and bigger systems that'll graduate to the outside of the house. And the first thing I had on my list, which isn't going to be it's not going to be a staple, but it's going to be supplement. Some people take it as a supplement, but it's going to be spirulina, which can really just take up. I mean, if you have an extra room, you could put like a kiddie pool in there and then do a large scale size spirulina thing if you wanted to. Or if all you have is space for a fish tank, you could do a fish tank in the living room or any extra room that you have and grow a complete protein that way. And a lot of people take that as a supplement. A lot of vegans and vegetarians take that as a supplement as well. Spirulina, you can be in a studio apartment and still grow spirulina if you wanted to and still produce a decent amount of protein.
That's a good one, son. I'll be honest with you. It didn't even cross my mind, but now that you said it, I'm like, boy, that is actually quite, and that's just one of many benefits you get from something like spirulina. Next one I'm going to come off is going to seem like a no brainer, but folks, think back to what Eric said regarding design. This is so important. I'm going to say, okay, you're on that 1 acre. I talked about sheep. Okay, what should you have go behind them? And by the way, there's so many awesome responses right here in the chat, and we're going to cover some of those. Amy says bean sprouts are a complete protein. Great. One-legged woodworker, goats, sheep, chickens. Yeah, but let's talk about them in context. I'm going to talk about chickens and specifically laying birds. We're talking about 1 acre. So every time your ruminants go through to bust up that parasite cycle, now look, you're not going to get 20 of them out there, okay? But to break up that parasite cycle, you want something going behind them. It could be ducks. I'm going to talk about chickens because of the versatility and what they're going to do in the soil. They're going to scratch. They're going to break up. They're going to go through that poop, and they're going to make absolutely sure that they get any of the larvae. So we want to try to make their rotation about 3 days after the ruminant went through, because by that time, all the fly larvae or anything present is going to be making itself known. And the chickens will definitely make them pay. They're going to pay the piper for that. But it has to be done in a holistic system. So what system, Sam, what holistic system that you could have, let's say you're in a stationary spot and it can be mobile. And let's say you got layers out there. What system have you and I both talked about that would work beautifully for a bunch of laying birds?
The chicken tractor on steroids. I mean, that is an awesome system that I don't think enough people really tap into, because you produce all of your, like if you're doing layers, you produce all of your eggs for free. All of their chickens are getting all of their food from the system itself, which needs to be combined with at least a garden, I should say. So that we have garden waste and compostable material. You produce a cubic yard of compost per week if you have the right sizes and everything. Once you have a chicken tractor on steroids and a garden on your property, and you have the numbers all figured out as far as chickens and how much food you need and feed requirements in order for them to lay, once you have all that figured out, it's a closed loop system for your property. That means it needs no outside inputs in order for this system to function and produce excess, which is what regenerative is. But yeah, It's awesome.
Keep in mind that this system, there's going to be a lot of us right now that have more time than money. This system is going to be a little more time. You're going to have to invest more time in it. No doubt about that. But the rewards, I mean, the chickens lay more in a system like that. They work harder. They're a little rougher looking, but they're happy birds, and they're not just sitting here lounging around waiting for some pellets to come out there. So that's going to be my next one right there.
The next one I have, which is going to, I'm actually going to answer a couple of things all at the same time. My next one I have is comfrey, and that can be grown inside the house again or on the front porch if you wanted to. Now, if you Google it, it'll tell you not to eat comfrey. I say you're an adult. You can make your free choices. They did it for centuries before that Rockefeller study in the early 90s there have been no documented illnesses from comfrey outside of that one particular study that the Rockefellers did in the 90s and then figured out how to synthesize the active compound in it. But comfrey, it's super high in protein. It, once you have a plant, you never have to buy the plant again. Now, Kai Schlott asked earlier, first of all, he was asking if we were related. Yes, that is my dad and I'm his son. And then also he said earlier that he bought comfrey from the website that I recommended. He bought 20 of them and he planted 20 of them and they're all doing wonderful. That was my dad's website that I recommended, permapasturesfarm.com. If you want to buy comfrey, go to dad to get it. But yeah, comfrey, you can, same thing with the spirulina. If you have an extra room to dedicate, you could turn that extra room into somewhat of like a controlled greenhouse if you wanted to. Open up the windows if you wanted, but you could grow comfrey in that greenhouse. It's a low-growing shrub. It grows, regrows very, very quickly as long as the temperature is appropriate. Like I just cut some in the back garden 2 weeks ago and mulched the garden with it, and it's already back. It doesn't look like other than like the nubs that you can see on some of the stalks, it looks like I never even cut it. So yeah, comfrey. And also two for one, not only going to be your food, can also go into your first aid kit as well. There's a guy at my jiu-jitsu gym who just broke two ribs. 50-year-old dude rolling around with a 17-year-old, and they're both white belts, so that just spells disaster. Broke two of his ribs, and he's putting comfrey salve on his ribs right now. But he has already said that like he's only done it for 4 days so far, and he's already noticed like a vast difference. He can take a deep breath now, so that's awesome.
Oh man, that's good news. Well, here's another one I'm going to suggest. And by the way, man, son, this is exactly why I would love to do. We need to get another carrier. I would love to do a call-in program for exactly the reasons I'm seeing right now in the chat. Man, there are so many awesome ideas out there. And folks, this program isn't about us. It's about being able for us to be able to learn from you. And we could do it a whole lot better if we had a call-in program as well. So I think in order to do that, we're going to have to switch up. Man, we really got to put a little bit of work into that and find out why, because this is exactly how cool would this show be if I said, hey, every caller, you know, if you're going to call in, tell me what yours is and give me the skinny on it. We could put out the word ahead of time. I mean, we could all learn from that. They're putting out some really good stuff that I didn't think about. So, yeah, we gotta seriously think about doing that. All right. So my next one's going to be meat birds. Now, it's not a... Okay, so let's say you got layers out there. Here's the cool thing about that chicken tractor on steroids. It works better the bigger the bird, because the more material that can move, the ideal bird in that system is not what you've been told. It's not one, you know, all they give you all the metrics of what the ideal bird is. In a system like the chicken tractor on steroids, instead of just having a layer, why not get a dual-use bird? Why not get a Bressie? Or breasts, however two people choose. Why not get a Bielefelder? Why not get there's so many of them out there that are good meat birds and also good layers. You could extract the birds from that system and put some straight up chicken on the table. You could also use that system to grow eggs. It could all be in the same system if you so chose, but we're talking about an acre here. So let's say you have one area where you did it exclusively for your layers, and another area where you did it exclusively for your meat birds. They will burn. You can put them in the same system if you wanted, or you could separate the system, and it's going to require a little more work, but you could do that. You could absolutely do that, or leave layers in there full time, raise up some meat birds. When they get big enough, then you could transfer them into that system. Now, look, you're going to, when you integrate birds, you got to do it right. Otherwise, you're going to have a Brown versus Board of Education moment in there. It ain't going to be pretty. So, and somebody's going to die. No doubt about that. But you could easily take a dual use bird, a dual purpose bird, and do that very same. I'm not a big fan of Cornish crosses, so I don't raise them. But yeah, get me a dual purpose bird. Now we can talk turkey or talk chicken. So you can use that same exact system in there. You could use waste streams from bakeries, you know, Mexican restaurants, Chipotle. It doesn't even matter, folks. I got more food coming in than I can possibly use. And then here's the deal. Like William mentioned a minute ago, in that system, you're producing anywhere between 1 to 3 cubic yards of compost per week. Let's say you got all you need. Huh? You think maybe you might be able to sell that high quality compost? Maybe you take it, let it cure a little while. Let it really, you know, be really, really awesome and all the stuff it needs. And you might be able to have a little side hustle on the side there. So, yeah, that's my next one.
The next one that I have, again, working small and then building our way out, would be Moringa. This was mentioned actually by someone in the chat, GDHRT Garden, I think. Yeah, Moringa. So this I'm picturing being either grown like up against the side of your house like I do here on the south side of the house, or on the property's edge, or wherever it may be, something that's not going to, because Moringa isn't going to take up a bunch of space. People automatically assume because it's a tree, it's going to take a lot of space, not where you're occupying. It takes up a lot of space above your head, depending on where you live and depending on your growing season for Moringa. I mean, so for some of you, it might make sense to do just keep Moringa in pots because you're going to have to move them in and out during the cold and warm weathers. But Moringa, I did a video on how to overwinter if overwintering has been an issue with you, for you growing Moringa. But Moringa is super, super high in protein, has a bunch of vitamins, has a bunch of minerals. It can purify water if you wanted to. Once it's established, it's drought proof. I mean, there's a lot of benefits to Moringa. Everything on the property can eat Moringa. I think it's like 30% protein. Once it's dried, it's a complete protein as well, so you're not missing any of those amino acids. Yeah, it's amazing. And it doesn't take up a whole lot of space, especially if you, and that's without even like training it. If you trained it, you could make it take up whatever space you wanted it to. And it can act as an overstory. So if you're where I live here in Texas, you can use your Moringa, coppice it or polar or coppice it as you're going into colder temperatures, and then uncover the mulch as you get into warmer temperatures. And then as it grows up, it's going to provide a canopy for your animals below it, like chickens, your smaller animals below it. Once you start getting into those really, really hot summer temperatures, and it's going to be just fine during your drought periods. So yeah, Moringa, it can take up as little space or as much space as you want it to.
Man, when I think of Moringa, man, I know this sounds a little bit out of whack, but I guarantee you there's a girl in the hood named Moringa and Ashwagandha.
Moringa, Ashwagandha, Lavender, all those names, Dad.
Yeah, it'll be... Yeah.
The Brown family.
Yeah, it's all there, man. Real quick, and we'll cover more of these questions, but here's one that jumped out. Question from Amy, because comfrey has such a deep taproot, planting in a pot, does it stun the growth?
I would say with the pot, like, you just got to water it more. It's not going to really stunt the growth. It'll consume that entire pot. I mean, most pots that most people are going to move and pick up and stuff like that. Like anywhere. I mean, if you did a 5-gallon bucket, a 5-gallon bucket is going to have different dimensions than a 5-gallon pot. But if you did a 10-gallon pot, 5-gallon pot, anything like that, the comfrey is going to fill that pot. Now, I did a consultation for a lady over in Arkansas who was moving from, she moved from her property in Louisiana, moved to Arkansas, and she had all of her trees in a pot. So, like, she was kind of getting ready for this move to more land and stuff like that. So she grew everything in a pot, and she actually did guilds in a pot. And so she would do, and she had big, like, 30-gallon pots. They needed, like, equipment to move these pots. But she did like an apple tree or whatever kind of tree. And then she did 2 to 4 comfrey around that tree in the pot. And that whole pot was consumed with just comfrey. Like, you couldn't see any bare soil. But keep in mind, if it's in a pot, you're going to have to water it a lot more. It's not going to stunt the growth, though.
Well, there's also this rumor out there that you can't plant comfrey too close. Look, absolute hogwash. Yeah, that's another story there, son. But I got hit with that one last week. like, oh, the comfrey's too close. No, it ain't. It'll do just fine. Now you go to digging up the roots. Yeah, you might have a problem on an application like that. And in some ways, it might actually be preferable. So, yeah, you can. It's not a problem. And I've heard that one many times before. Yeah, Kyle says, now when I hear Billy talk about William's mom, I don't feel so uncomfortable. Thanks for clarifying. Yep. All right. So my next one here, remember, folks, in permaculture, we stack functions. We're talking about 1 acre. So maybe you don't want to have rabbits over here, chickens over there. So you can stack functions. Let's say you have a little outbuilding, just a little small one there, and that's where you're going to grow your chickens. Let's say you don't want to do the chicken tractor on steroids. Let's say you're just going to do a deep bedding model, which you can do holistically. You can absolutely do that holistically. And I'm going to talk about another animal in a minute that you wouldn't believe you could do it with. Anyway, let's say you got chickens out there. You can take a page out of Polyface and turn it into a racking house, meaning a cross between a rabbit and a chicken. So now all of a sudden you got rabbits that are above your chickens in hutches. Okay. That's where they chill. That's where they like to hang out. The rabbit poop falls down. The chickens don't mind. And it's going to only make better compost when you finally dig that stuff out of there. So the chickens, the rabbits, they're all occupying the same space. And it's, like I said, the more manure, the clean manure you have in there, the better that compost is going to be, the better microorganisms you're going to have in there. It's only going to work out even better. If you want to throw some cow poop in there as well, no problem. So every once in a while, you're going to take all that stuff out of there, and it's, well, for the most part, depending on how long you leave it, it might very well be compost underneath that top layer. So anyway, you're going to have to get in there every once in a while, get all that stuff out, and then you could use it in your gardens. But you got your rabbits above, and when you talk about rabbits, I mean, it may be the most land-efficient livestock protein source. I mean, producing a large amount of meat with a very small footprint, and it may be more applicable, people. We're talking about an acre, but you don't need an acre. You can be doing everything we're talking about on a half acre or less, every single bit of it. So yeah, combine some of these things.
I mean, I'm on like a third of an acre. I'm on pretty small acreage, this house right now. And everything that we discussed, except for the sheep, is doable on this property for sure. I mean, I have chickens in the back, and that's not even done efficiently. But yeah, and if I were to do sheep, there's a field right across that they just mow. I'm pretty sure I could convince them to let me use that field for sheep right over there. Real quick, GDHRT Garden asked, if you have time and it's in alignment with the show, could you tell me if duckweed overgrowth in ponds has a use case? Absolutely. Duckweed, azolla, all that green small leaf stuff that grows on the very, very small leaf stuff. Some people mistake it as algae. Growing on the top of your ponds, they definitely have a use case. Again, there's a protein content in them. I don't know if it's high enough to add it to the list, but you could use it for chicken feed. You could use it to feed if you had a pond close by and it was and you had chickens and you're on the small acreage. You could use the duckweed to feed your poultry. You could use it to feed your rabbits. You could use it as a compost activator. It's going to be a high nitrogen, and it's going to add a gel component to your compost. You could use it as just straight up chop and drop on your garden if you wanted to, and use it as like a mulch, which you're doing two things at the same time. You're rehydrating your soils, and then you're also mulching it, and then you're doing a slow release, like you're composting in place, a slow release fertilizer, microbial food, all types of stuff. So yeah, there's a lot of uses for duckweed for sure. But the next one on my list is going to be squab. And this is, I mean, you could do anything from just like a window perch, like a window type insert thing where you use your, you know, your chickens or your squab, your pigeons mount to that. And then it's like a chicken coop type thing mounted out of your window, all the way to like a dedicated coop just right outside your back door if you wanted to. But a cool thing with pigeons is like all you have to do is provide them a home and they provide everything else for themselves. They get their own water. They build their own nests. Once they have like a breeding pair, then they're like mate for life. They get their own food. They get their own food for their young as well. And if you have like a pair and you introduce them to a coop and they take to that coop, they're going to keep coming back year after year after year. And then you can just multiply outward if you wanted to. And then their squab, you're thinking a pigeon ain't much of a meal. The squab, which is the teenage pigeon, is actually bigger than its parents at that time. And then you eat that. they're ugly things, so it ain't too difficult to eat them. They're not cute or anything like that. You're not thinking, oh, I can't eat a little baby chicken looking thing. Doesn't look like that at all. You feel like you're putting it out of its misery whenever you look at that thing. So yeah, squab. That doesn't take up much space at all.
Here's one right here, folks. You're going to think I lost my mind, but I'm telling you, it can be done. In fact, Jason, so the land recently, or not recently, a couple of years ago did it. And you can get a whole lot of fat and get a whole lot of meat. And that's pigs. In an area, in a carport, now I will qualify this here in a minute. In a carport, that's what he had there. And I want to say it might have been somewhere in the neighborhood. The footprint might have been, I don't know, maybe 16 by 16, somewhere thereabout. But if you were to have an area about that big that was covered, facing to the south is what I would recommend in the northern hemisphere. Or and the reason why I wouldn't face it toward the north is that it's just going to catch a bunch of wind. But I would face it to the south because then that way they're not going to get overheated when the sun rises in the east, sets in the west. So why have I lost my mind? Absolutely not. And you will never smell them if you do what I'm telling you. If you had a couple of pigs, you could even, folks, remember we're talking an acre. You could do everything I talked about here on this 1 acre easily. If you had a footprint of a 20 by 20, you might be able to get 3 or 4 pigs up in there, but you could at least get 2. Now, depending on the type you get. And I wouldn't be getting any of these designer things out there. I wouldn't be getting a guinea hog or anything like that. Not unless that's what you want. But, man, if you're in it for the meat, man, I don't even want to start thinking about you could at least get off of each pig somewhere in the neighborhood of about, let's say you let them get up to about 300 pounds, somewhere thereabouts. You're getting 100 pounds of meat off of each one of them. And I ain't even counting the fat that you could render and all the other things. So, anyway, pigs. You could do everything I just told you about the chickens. You can do that with the pigs. You know, find, or let's say you raised up chickens first. Here's another little way. Let's say you had a smaller footprint. Let's say you raised up a bunch of meat birds. They're in the freezer. You're thinking, okay, man, I don't want to deal with all that compost right now. You know, the deep bedding out there. Now you run your pigs in there in the same doggone environment. And if you have things down there that are fermenting, those pigs will tear that place apart trying to get that corn at the bottom of there. So you can put in some corn that has now been fermented by the time, you know, those chickens are done. And it's going to be down there anyway, because if you had feed, there's going to be some that didn't make it. Pigs are going to go down there. They are going to absolutely turn that pile like nothing you've ever seen before. Just to get a kernel of corn at the bottom of there that may be fermenting drives them crazy. So you could raise them in the very same deep bedding model that you used on pigs. On chickens, you can do it on pigs. Same exact thing. So it works well with all omnivores. You can have them in that area. Now, preferably, it's always going to be better if you could have these guys out in the natural environment, but it can be done there. And, you know, give them things they can do. Give them a little ball. If you have a bigger area, yeah, you could do it there. But you want to make sure you keep down the smell. So carbon is your best friend in an area like that. So you're going to want a good carbon source. Wood chips. It can be any number of things. And then ultimately that's going to turn into compost as well. That was my last one, son.
If real quick on the wood chip thing, the carbon thing, if you've ever looked at, like, let's say you came and dropped off some wood chips and you're looking at the pile and you're wondering, I wonder if this is enough wood chips. The answer is always no. You never have enough wood chips. The answer is always going to be no, unless you just literally, unless it's cutting off access. If it's cutting off access, then you're good. You have enough. But if it's not cutting off access and it ain't catching fire and it's not near a fire source, no, you do not have enough wood chips. And then we had a question earlier. I don't know who asked it, but they were asking, is it best for the rabbits to raise them in a small cage? It doesn't seem humane. Believe it or not, some people will say, I would say if the rabbits can get on the ground somehow doing like a rabbit tractor, that's always going to be a better option than raising them in the cages. But some people say like the rabbits are actually happier in a smaller confined space because they're bottom of the food chain prey. And if they're in a big open space, they're not going to get relaxed. They're not going to get comfortable because they're in a big open space and they're vulnerable. But if they're in like some sort of cage like that, they actually feel safer and become a lot more comfortable. I did hear about this one lady who was trying to do like a free range rabbitry or whatever. And she had a lot of open space for them to run around, and I think she was intending to, for them to graze. But her fertility rates went way up once she started enclosing the rabbits. I don't know what that means for the rabbits, but it just I think it shows that they like smaller confined spaces compared to those big open spaces. But the next, if that's the last one for you, then I'll just do the last ones that I have written down. And keep in mind, everything that we listed here today could all fit on one properly designed property. Like, it's not like you have to pick one or two from what we've listed and then apply those to your small property. Everything we've listed and more can be done on a 1 acre property. Next one I had kind of goes hand in hand, sunflowers and legumes. You can use, they can occupy the same doggone space. They're both producing protein. Sunflower, the heads of them, the seeds produce a decent amount of protein. Everything that we've listed so far will eat sunflower heads as well. I remember being shocked at how much the sheep ate on the sunflowers. I thought they were just going to eat some of the leaves. They left nubs. I don't know how they got those sunflower heads, but they figured it out and they got nubs. They left nubs afterwards. Your chickens will go crazy for them. Your pigs will go crazy for them. All of your birds will go crazy for sunflower seeds. And then get your sunflowers established first and then grow your legumes at the base of your sunflowers, and the legumes can climb up your sunflowers, occupying less total space than if you were to do a trellis or if you were to do some other separate system for your legumes. I say legumes broadly because they're all generally higher in protein, and depending on where you live determines which legume you're going to go with. And then another one that I had is quail, which is another small bird that, I mean, if you wanted to, you could raise inside your house if you wanted to, but that's going to be funky. If you've ever had a chicken brooder in your house, you know how funky these birds can get even when you're staying on top of it. So quail, if you want to, inside the house, but quail for sure outside the house. I wouldn't say they're the most efficient protein source that you could grow on your property, but they're definitely something that you can supplement your protein with. Another one is ducks. Again, ducks require more square footage per duck than chickens do, in my opinion. Chickens can like cohabitate with certain systems, like lawn systems. Ducks cohabitate with like forested and pond systems, and they will poop on and flatten everything else. And their poop is slippery. So like, I remember at Jeff Lawton's when we're trying to thin the numbers on the Muscovy ducks, we were slipping and sliding all over the place. And we just, you had to accept the fact that you have to take a shower after working with ducks, especially if you're trying to catch them in their pens. But ducks, they can maintain, like a lot of people, let's say they have a small pond. People will get like in the teens worth of ducks or 20 ducks thinking it takes that many ducks to maintain that pond. Very few ducks are required to maintain a pond because they do so much damage. They flatten so much. They poop on so much. They do so much damage. Granted, they're not tilling things up like chickens would or scratch things up like chickens would or even pecking holes in things like chickens would, but they will flatten and poop on everything. So all that to say is that all of this needs to be properly designed. Without proper design, all of this is going to fail. These are all just different cogs that you can put in the wheel of your particular piece of property.
Man, I wish we did have a call-in show, man. So many good ideas out here in the chat. Here's one I didn't know. Moringa can be used as a microgreen. I did not know that. Let's see here. What else we got here?
My daughter treats it like a microgreen. She, every single day, she'll grab a couple of leaves. Now that the trees are outside, we have to wait till she's outside, but she'll grab a couple of leaves and hand a couple to everybody and say, eat this. We'll wait there until you do eat it.
How big does comfrey need to be when first growing before you start taking leaves to use? It really doesn't. I mean, there's people out there telling you that it's got to be a certain size or whatever. It's never mattered. I mean, let's say a foot, you know, when you get some leaves on there, you know, remember, we don't want to rape the environment. You just take what you need and then leave some back, you know, so you don't, maybe you got multiple plants where you can get those from. I think we may have gotten through. Let's see here. I want rabbits for man. Yeah. Okay. I think you already covered that one. Yeah. We got to see about doing a call-in show, man, because there are so many. Okay. Here's another one from Amy. Question. Do sheep require a livestock guardian dog? Depends on where you are. Remember, you're on 1 acre. Maybe you're surrounded by a bunch of 1 acre places. I like them for multiple reasons, because those livestock guardian dogs even chase off birds of prey if you get a good one. Milk Boy does that. If there's any hawks flying over, believe me, he's over there yelling at them. So you can use them for multiple things. It depends. That's one of those answers I know nobody wants to hear, but yes, it really does depend.
And something that might be counterproductive to that or counterintuitive to that would be, I would need a livestock guardian dog more if I were to graze that pasture right across the street from me than if I were in the middle of nowhere, because of the amount of factor in not only your like natural predators and stuff, but also how many dogs are running loose. Because if I put sheep in that field right across from me and I don't put a livestock guardian dog out there, those sheep are going to get all kinds of messed with. They're going to get pushed out of the fencing. They're going to get attacked in certain cases. And also the the livestock guardian dog is going to be working more here than he would be in the middle of nowhere.
Keep in mind that, you know, they got a pretty loud bark. If you got a Great Pyrenees, I mean, that bark can echo for a long, long way. So if you're in a neighborhood or you got people close around you, you're going to be keeping them up at night because they're going to be hearing things that may not be an immediate threat. They'll hear things in the distance and they're going to bark and they're going to react to it. So just keep that in mind. All right. Want to thank everybody for checking us out. Remember, check out the Sovereign Health Summit for all of you folks out there that are, man, in this time, in this world, you wonder why we talk about health so much on this podcast. Well, it's becoming a more and more and more toxic world. Things are getting crazier and crazier every day, but man, it's such a joy to be able to come on here and talk about some of the solutions. All right, y'all. Till next time, stay alert.
Stay alive.
I'm grooving with the truth, truth, truth. Feeling anxious, truth, truth, truth. We got the answers, all we need to do. Listen to the earth, they got us through. Let's see the machine, watch the world spin. From the smallest sprout to the harmony begin. In the cycle of life, for the magic's alive.